Welcome to Circuit Break from MacroFab, a weekly show about all things engineering, DIY projects, manufacturing, industry news, and the engineering student life and YouTube. We're your hosts, electrical engineers Parker Dillman
and Stephen Craig.
This is episode 423. Circuit Break from MacroFab. Hey, Circuit Breakers. We have an announcement. We're running an electronic design contest on our community forums. The theme is food devices. Go to forum.macrofab.com to find out more information about the contest and how to enter. There's a category on the left side of the forum that says contests. Click that. You'll find it. For prizes, there's over $5,000 in cash and free prototyping services through MacroFab. And the most important thing, a trophy to show that your design was one of the best entered. There'll be a link in the show notes where to find more information about this contest and how to enter. And thank you, Mauser Electronics, for sponsoring the contest.
Joining us today is Alexander Vartanov. Alexander is a 20-year-old electrical engineering student based out of Southern California who is a lover of all things electrical and mechanical. He goes out of his way to work on projects either for himself or with others. Currently, most of his time goes to school, his low-cost kit car project, or working on projects for YouTube personalities.
Welcome to the podcast, Alexander, or Alex.
Hello. Alex works, but yeah.
Or Alegs.
Alegs, yeah. Many aliases.
So you're an electrical engineering student. How far are you into your degree so far?
So I'm currently in community college, but I got accepted to transfer to California State Northridge. So I'm not technically in the electrical engineering courses part of the, you know, getting a degree, but I'm in the beginning stage. I haven't taken any classes, but I'm fairly familiar with electrical engineering, at least I think.
So you've done like a lot of transfer classes so far. What's been the biggest difference between high school and your current college courses?
Generally, the mentality of the students and the mentality of the teacher / professors. The students seem to care more than in high school. High school is very much a just mess around, find out type of deal. But the students, at least were in the classes I've taken, seem to care a little bit more and they put in a little bit more effort. Professors, way more relaxed. In high school, I was always hearing, we're making this class hard because we have to prepare you for college, university. But the professors are real nice, at least the ones I've had. So,
you know, it's surprisingly different when you're paying for every class you're doing, right?
Yeah, it's probably a motivator.
Yeah. And the professors are also paid a bit more than high school teachers too. So maybe they can be a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah, I do very much enjoy the college atmosphere more than the high school atmosphere, a lot less banter, like in a toxic way or any of that. Just people are generally nicer, more understanding towards each other and more likely to help each other out.
When I started college, I actually wasn't I picked engineering, but I wasn't an electrical engineer. I think Stephen went into A&M as a electrical engineer, right?
Nope, I went in as an aeronautical engineer.
Oh, so we both changed majors. So
yeah.
Yeah. Both of us, we didn't know what kind of engineering I guess we really wanted to do. I picked based off my parents because my dad was a chemical engineer in the petroleum industry. So that was what I knew at the time for engineering. So Alex, why did you decide to pick the hardest engineering degree out there?
Nobody told me it was the hardest. No.
Get ready.
I picked electrical because I've been doing electrical related things since like the sixth grade, just as a hobby. And I thought to myself like, I could do this for a living. I went through phases where I considered like, I'll double major, I'll do electrical and mechanical, or I'll do electrical and chemical, or all this. And then I ended up just saying, screw the other things. I'm just going to do electrical and get it over with.
You know what's funny is you are going to be doing all those things as an electrical engineer.
Oh, yeah. I'm well prepared. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Right. Well, and after school, you will still do all of those things.
Electrical engineers are starting to be treated as kind of the, if you need to pick one engineer that your company has, it's going to be electrical because they can do kind of everything.
Yeah, I've noticed that at least in the recommended coursework, there's statics. So there's like mechanical stuff. There's, you know, of course, the electrical stuff. And then there's also coding related stuff. So it's kind of like a coverall engineer in a sense. The mechanical stuff makes a little bit like, why do I need this? But I realized like, yeah, there's going to be some need for mechanical later on with what I do. So.
Yeah, especially when you have to start fitting, let's say, electronics inside enclosures. What's interesting is they make you take statics, because I took statics, but that was for my petroleum engineering degree. And fortunately, that covered like the physics elective that I had to pick for electrical engineering. I was able to be like, oh, I took statics, so I can just use that. But statics was not required for electrical engineering at my college.
There's actually a lot of physics I was required to take as prerequisites. I had to take statics. I had to take like a kinematics class of friction and motion and all those things. And then I, of course, electricity and magnetism. But yeah, there's a lot of physics demands. And I still have to do a material science class that I haven't done yet. But yeah.
Is that a requirement through the community college or through the four-year that you're looking at?
Through the four-year I'm transferring to. They have, they have a lot of those just somewhat slightly arbitrary, but not like slightly related classes that they throw in there. UCLA actually has a lot more classes that they throw in the pit as well, a lot more coding classes too.
That's fascinating, because I had to take a handful of those as well, but they weren't until later in my degree. Like I think I took electromagnetism my junior year, my second semester of my junior year. It wasn't a requirement to just get in. But then again, that was also a electrical engineering specific electromagnetics class, whereas physics 2 was electromagnetism. And I suppose that that's more generic for other degrees as well. I think overall EM was the worst class that I had to take, just because the professor was god awful. And it's already a difficult topic. And it just, none of it made sense. And it just felt like jumping through hoops and proving math for some reason. I don't know. It was very difficult.
Yeah, I managed to like kind of scrape by with a decent bit of just like intuition. But yeah, it was a interesting class. Like some things like, oh yeah, charges, they happen. Good luck. And a lot of other stuff like that. Like, oh yeah, calculate the value of this capacitor with this force, the random variables that you will never need to do again.
It's interesting that they're making you take those kind of physics classes to be able to transfer in instead of like more basic math classes. So what kind of math classes have you taken so far?
I've taken the calculus trio, and I'm currently taking differential equations. They, for some reason, didn't require me to take linear algebra, and I'm not complaining, so...
Yeah, because we've talked about that before, is I think linear algebra is probably the most important for electrical engineering. And
oh, great.
It's No, what's interesting is for my degree, that was an elective math class I took. And I ended up using that like more often than not, way more than calculus, at least. Hmm. But that's just what I do.
Yeah, I didn't have an official linear algebra class. I had a class that came after DiffyQ. And I don't even remember what it was called, but it was like matrices and manipulation and things
linear algebra.
It's linear, but it wasn't called linear. It was called advanced mathematics or something like that.
Even though DiffyQ is super advanced mathematics.
There's a certain point that you get to in math where things stop stacking, things stop building upon each other, and they branch. And I think that's DiffyQ. After DiffyQ, you're then applying everything DiffyQ and down to different topics.
That's fair. Yeah, I would agree with that. What's been your favorite class so far? And I guess your most hated class too.
Most hated class so far, DiffyQ. even though I'm currently in it, you know, just knee deep and plowing through. Favorite class, I was taking Chemistry 101, and the first time I took it, I dropped it because the professor just wasn't working out for me. I'm retaking it right now. So much nicer. I love chemistry. I've taken multiple chemistry classes before in like high school, AP Chem, the whole shebang. Chemistry is fun when it's like understandable chemistry, when you're not dealing with I don't know, arbitrary stuff, but I love chemistry and the physics with like the physics one was also pretty nice. I did enjoy those classes a lot.
You said arbitrary chemistry. What's that entail?
So the things in chemistry I enjoy are the things I can like visualize, you know, reactions.
And you're picking electrical engineering.
Yeah. I got him.
Yeah. But yeah, I thermochem, honestly, people complain about thermochem. It's not that bad. You're just moving heat from here and there and it's making things do things, but it's not atrocious.
Alex is going to tell us that he can see electrons move.
I can visualize electrons. I can understand where they're moving mentally. You know those like videos that you used to see in like high school and stuff when they were teaching you very basic electronics? Like, here, the electrons move this way through this very simple circuit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of stuff.
Water in a pipe kind of stuff.
Yeah. So that's how I generally visualize. And then, of course, I visualize it like an oscilloscope. But that's more of a literal visualization than anything else.
It's going to be interesting what you think of when you start looking in your substrate / solid state class, when you start looking at how semiconductors actually function and seeing how that translates, because that's going to be interesting.
Currently, to me, semiconductors are a magical black box where you put pixies in and it spits pixies out. But
eventually that will not be the case.
Great.
I don't know. They're still magical to me.
It's a magical IC that does magical things.
I remember I drew the energy levels of how an N-channel MOSFET worked for a job interview once.
Oh, nice.
God, that was a long time ago. Back where I remember.
could you do that now?
Could I do that now?
Did you get the job?
I did, but I declined it. It was an internship for AMD. And they wanted me to skip a semester to do a internship through like the summer and then through like the fall. And I was just like, no, that's not worth it. I'm going to keep at school. Thought about it because the money would have been nice, but.
What year would this have been? Like, was it?
In between my junior and senior year.
Okay. But was this like was this Athlon era or like Bulldozer era or?
I think it was an Athlon X2.
Okay. So when AMD was still on the uphill.
Barely.
Yeah, but it's not a Bulldozer situation, so.
No. It was, the Bulldozer was right after the X2. My fear was I would become, because they wanted like a lab tech intern, and my fear was the money would have been good and I would not have gone back to school and finished my degree.
Oh, gotcha.
That was my biggest fear. And so, I don't know if that was a wise choice or not, but. That's the choice I made.
So, quick tangent, because you said lab tech. I ran into something recently. In fact, someone I work with who worked at I won't say the name of the company, but it's a large company that you would know if I said it. And he, when he left, he was a solder technician level 28. They apparently have 30 different grades of solder technicians at this one place. And I think, I can't remember what he said. He got hired on as like a 13 and got promoted to like a 21 and then got promoted again to a 28. Like why would anyone need that level of granularity in solder technicians?
I mean,
how do you even determine that level of granularity?
I do know why.
Yeah. What's that?
So the problem with a lot of companies and technicians is it's hard to have upward mobility. Really, a lot of times it's like the only mobility you have to go up in most of those companies is to become a manager, right?
Mm.
And the problem is you only need so many managers, you know, for certain company sizes. And so if you put in those micro levels, at least the people are progressing in job title.
Yeah, but he was progressing like 10 levels at a time. Right?
Okay, that's different. But I'm saying that's why that's there, though. And they can have different pay scales in there. And they probably actually have like certain qualifications that you need to have a certain level.
Probably. It just seems.
What does level 30 entail, though? Is that like just telekinetic flow of solder or?
You're the king of the techs.
You shoot lasers out, and you can solder with those laser beams.
It's like laser welding, but with solder. Is that even like a...
That is totally a thing, Alex.
Oh, yeah.
That is a thing?
Yeah, so it doesn't... So you still put the paste down on the board, but it uses a laser to melt the solder paste.
Oh, so you don't end up heating the package.
Correct. That's the idea.
That's cool.
It's... The biggest problem you run into that is it tombstones really easily because you usually only heat like one leg at a time and it tends to pull parts around. I want to say they use it a lot when you have to use like gold and stuff to like solder.
Gold, you have to get stupid hot to get it to actually melt and solder.
Freaking lasers, man.
How do they work?
Magnets, how do they work? Permanent magnets are still black magic to me. They just, we have a magnetic field. How?
Permanent magnets are up there on, especially when getting work out of them. That's one of those things where like, when you go down like the perpetual motion YouTube channels.
It's always magnets.
It's always magnets.
It's always magnets and it's always a dude in his garage building plywood and sticking magnets to it. Seriously, go watch
PVC
it.
Pipe.
Oh, you're right. And there's
PVC. You know why? Because it's easy to shove batteries in plywood and PVC pipe.
Ah, that's a good point. Yeah, I like that.
You wouldn't want like a billet aluminum like contraption because then it's expensive and it's hard to shove magnets into.
You already sound like a full degree in engineer.
Keep shoving magnets into it until it works. So speaking of YouTube, Alex, so you do a lot of, I want to say like behind the scenes work for YouTube channels.
Yeah. So it's sort of behind the scenes, sort of not. I do appear on camera, but I'm far from the main subject. I do projects for various YouTube personalities who need electrical or mechanical things made for their videos.
I think that's actually how Alex, you and I started talking it was your alarm clock project.
Oh yeah. That one was a fun one. So for context, two separate YouTube channels, one after the other, got in contact with me. One was Tyler Blanchard. I'd worked with him before for other projects, but he got in contact with me and he was like, hey, I have a video. So I found these alarm clock ideas on Reddit and I want them made. One of them was a alarm clock paper shredder and the other one was an alarm clock water gun. So he tells me, yeah, make these. You've got like 4 days, go ahead.
So what do these two alarm clocks do?
So paper shredder one, basically you're supposed to shove a couple dollars into it when you go to sleep. And if you hit the snooze button instead of, you know, flicking off the switch, it'll trigger the paper shredder to, you know, start shredding your bills and time is money and all that. And the water gun one is... Alarm go off, you get hosed down. Yeah, those were the two for that guy that I made. And then 2 weeks after that, his friend, much larger channel, Arak, gets in contact with me and he's like, hey, I saw what you did for Tyler. I want alarm clock that launches fireworks and an alarm clock that hoses you down, but much more literally. And it kind of spiraled from there to the point where he was surrounded by fireworks on a bed at 6 a.m, downtown LA, and it woke up the neighborhood.
So how did you make that work? Because you modified some pre-existing alarm clocks to make that work.
Yeah. So the alarm clocks that I used for three of them, the two for the first guy and the one for the second guy were these little sharp, cheapy alarm clocks off of Amazon. And what I did for them was they both the switch on the back to turn off the alarm clock and the snooze button are floating, or like a floating switch that pulls to ground. So all I did was add a pull-up resistor across the switch to its power, and I put like a little detection circuit. So when it would be pulled down, it would trigger. For the paper shredder one, it would only trigger with the snooze button, that was a fairly simple one. Just when it pulls down, trigger monostable 555 circuit, to run the shredder for X period of time. The water gun one was a bit more complicated because it needed to be turned off when either the snooze button or the power switch was hit. Sorry, either the snooze button, not the power switch, the like alarm off switch was hit. So I needed to build a very questionable AND gate out of two discrete NPN transistors to turn off the monostable circuit.
I'm curious why you say questionable.
Because it wasn't a perfect AND gate. Even with with an AND gate, if one input goes low, the output's supposed to drop fully to zero. One of them did that. The other transistor dropped it only to like 0.3 volts, and it didn't fully turn off the 555. So I had to use a diode as a voltage dropper with a resistor to pull enough current across the diode to have enough forward voltage drop to turn off the 555. My oscilloscope saved me many times that weekend.
So you pulled all this off in, what, 4 days, you said?
Yeah, 2 days to get the parts in, and then 1 day each alarm clock to build.
We'll put links in the show notes to the videos. Are you at all in those videos?
I wasn't in the one on Tyler's channel, but for ARAC, I did show up for showing off both the water gun hose down and the firework bed.
Firework bed.
Yeah, that one was, I told them like, hey, don't give him a polyester blanket. That's a bad idea. And they still gave him a polyester blanket.
Well, I guess since you're not in jail, no one got hurt, so.
Yeah, nobody got hurt. It was close, but nobody got hurt. I was very on edge the entire time. Like, I had a master kill switch on that thing and everything, just because I did not want a false positive to set off those fireworks early. There was like 20 different fireworks that had to go off.
So did you have to set up the igniter part?
Yeah, so for the igniters, I use these, like, I'm not sure if you're familiar, like these little Cobra Talon or whatever they're called. They're like a little nichrome coil that clips onto the fuse, and you just feed it 12 volts and it does its thing.
Okay. It's a little heater element almost.
Mm-hmm. And it just, yeah, it's a very simple clip on. So I had 20 of those feeding back to one lithium battery through a big boy relay. And that's what would trigger and send all the current there.
Yeah, that's great. I have not seen these before. Remember back in high school, we would ignite fireworks with, remember Estes rockets, the little igniters that you'd shove up in the back of the little tube? That was great for igniting fireworks. So we'd put fireworks underground and blow them up remotely.
Wait, underground?
Yeah. Yeah, we'd light up the fuse and stuff like that, dig a big hole, stick them under there, and blow big craters in the earth.
I was about to say, you're doing like North Korea nuke testing.
Live Saving Private Ryan recreations.
Yeah, with M80s, right? Classic.
So I know you did a car with LEDs all over it.
Yes, yeah, so that one was a bender. That one was a week to shove 30,000 LEDs on Alex Troy's Lamborghini and have them all addressable and controlled from like a single controller. And by God, that was the most soldering I have done in a 1 week period ever.
So did you actually like solder them on the Lamborghini?
Yeah, so the strips got stuck down, and then I had to solder a ton of power distribution wires because you have a lot of voltage drop over a strip. So I had to inject power every like 400 LEDs, and then I had to run all the wires to like a central fuse box, and there were two 100 amp hour lithium iron phosphate batteries behind the driver's seat that powered the whole thing. Full bore, it's supposed to pull like 150 amps at 24 volts. It is. But the problem was, it was so bright at any reasonable like brightness percentage that we had to turn it down to 5% brightness for it to show up and not white out the camera.
Huh. Oh, yeah, because you were probably shooting it at night.
Mm-hmm. We calculated like the brightness density was similar to like if the sun was blasting down in the middle of the day. Like, it's that bright in a small area. So, like, when it was driven down the freeway, it just lit up the freeway.
This cannot be legal to have that going on.
Oh yeah, he called his lawyer like, "Hey man," because we had a like a red and blue flashing lights thing across the entire car. Like, "Hey man, is this okay?" And his lawyer was like, "No, no."
Yeah.
A lot of these projects or people I got in contact with were because I had initially gotten in contact with one YouTuber who made like an open call. His name's Lewis Wise. He made like an open call like, "Hey, if you have any project experience and you want to work on cool projects, let me know. And I'll throw you in this group I have called the Wise Task Force." And then from there, it kind of spiraled. The first project I did IRL with him was a jet bike. So it was one of those miniature jet engines on a bicycle, $150 Walmart bicycle. And we took it like 75 miles an hour out in El Mirage, dry lake bed.
Oh, wow.
It's not safe. He got speed wobbles. So, and from him, I kind of got all the connections to work for all these other, or work with all these other YouTubers, which is fun.
How long you been doing the YouTube thing for?
I technically got in contact with Lewis in summer of 2021. The first project I did with him was spring of 2022. And then from there, I've just been in, you know, constant contact working either like in the background for research for projects or like actually hands-on with his projects.
Now, did you think you wanted to be an engineer back then, or has your experience doing these projects spurred you on?
I knew I wanted to be an engineer since like, at least an electrical engineer since the sixth grade, but doing these projects has definitely like reinforced my like, yeah, you can do this for a living and you can have fun doing it, at least. Fun is air quotes here, but you can have fun doing it.
So since the sixth grade, what happened? Like, that's not a sane thing a sixth grader says they want to be.
So kind of what the trigger was around the sixth grade, my dad, I'm not sure if you're familiar with like the first generation of LED lights, which was just a bunch of 5mm LEDs on a PCB in like a thing, you know, just all white light. Yeah. He brought a couple of those home and said, "Have at it." He gave me a soldering iron and I had at it. I just took off a bunch of LEDs from the thing. I desoldered them, stuck them together, shoved them on 9 volts, the whole shebang, did destruction testing with them. Like, how many volts can I pump into it? Like everything. And then from there, my electronics spiraled. I got a little cheapy Radio Shack, rest in peace, soldering iron and some of the little kits they had, the Velman kits, soldered those together. Failed miserably because unregulated soldering iron plus burning the crap out of yourself is not a good recipe. But yeah, from there, I kind of just kept doing electronics, little projects here and there. Of course, they got more complicated as time went along. But yeah, just as I thought, oh, that's a cool thing, I'd like to do that, I just did it.
So why did your dad just decide just to give you a whole bunch of LEDs, basically?
They were thrown away at work and he's just like, oh, cool. He brought two of them home. There was like a bigger one and a smaller one. He just brought them home like, here, have at it. Here's the soldering iron. Do what you want.
Did you show any interest in that before that? Or
I'd showed interest in soldering, but not electrical soldering, you know, wires together to make like decorative things and all that. And I started doing electrical because of those LEDs, because I already knew basically how to hold the iron and not burn myself immediately. Still burn myself, but not immediately. And then, yeah.
Isn't that funny? It's sometimes it's the smallest little things that can change a huge portion of your life. And just your dad saying, have some fun with some stuff I brought from work. And now you're going to school for it.
Yeah. When I was learning to solder with a little Radio Shack iron and learning to solder PCBs, I would always, all right, put the component in, you know, try to solder and then go over and reach for some wire. But I'd bend the iron in my finger enough that I'd like singe right where my pinky is. So I very quickly learned that the wire is stiff. Hold the iron more tightly. It's been a fun roller coaster. I got my first, one of my more notable purchases that I made in the early parts was bought myself a lead acid battery in the seventh grade. And I just kind of messed around with that for a while. I had like a little 2-watt solar panel. Like, oh, I can charge the battery off of this solar panel. And a 5-volt linear regulator. I can charge my phone off of this battery that's charged by the solar panel. And yeah, stuff like that.
So you already wanted to be an electrical engineer before you started doing this YouTube projects. But how has the YouTube projects changed how you view engineering.
It's definitely changed how I view pacing. Like, I've realized time is, at least because YouTube projects you need to do very fast paced because everyone's on a filming deadline. It's taught me how to do the bare minimum to get the project done and just how to do it fast. I've done some things that are like not 100% orthodox in terms of electronics, just to get them done, get them out the door, because, you know, it only needs to be used once or whatever the thought process is. But it's also made me better at soldering, faster at soldering, and way better at rapid prototyping.
So what's your favorite solder?
I'm not sure if you're familiar. Well, you're out in Texas. We have this place in Southern California called Apex Electronics. It is a surplus store where all of the aerospace industry that used to be in SoCal, all their surplus ended up in, like from the 60s and 70s, all that Lockheed and all that. Their surplus ended up in that store. And so I got a roll of 6040 Kester solder manufactured in 1994, a pound of it. And that's my go-to right now. And I got a pound of it last year for $20.
Oh, nice.
So, Alex, when my grandfather passed, one of the things I inherited was a box of Kester 6040 solder.
Oh, wow.
Kester 44. That was probably the best thing I've ever inherited. I've only used one roll. 1 pound. I gave away a couple of them over the years.
I still have a pretty decent amount on this spool.
Yeah. I think I've been to Apex Surplus.
There's actually an Apex in Houston.
It's not the same, I think. This one's like a privately owned little shack.
Oh, okay.
And there's lore too, if you're curious.
Yeah, what's the lore?
So Apex is owned by this dude, and then, well, I think it was a family thing, and then it got passed down to two brothers. I'm not 100% sure. I heard this like one time, and it's a bit foggy, but passed down to two brothers. One brother kept the store. The other one went and started Apex Junior, which is an online-only surplus thing, which carries...
I love the name.
Yeah, it carries the same moniker, and it's supposed to be like a branch off, because he wanted to like go online or whatever, or there was some rift in the family or... whatever, but
wait,
now there's...
Wait, Apex Junior, does it have a website that looks way old?
Old as hell, yeah.
Okay, I have been ordering wire from Apex Junior for over a decade, and I did not know it was that place.
I love, because I never heard of Apex Junior. I open up the website, and the two pictures, I would never order from this place.
I don't actually know what the front page looks like. Wait, let me see.
ApexJunior.com, your affordable, your source of for affordable electronics. But like, it's just like two pictures of the warehouse. And it's like, you know, I don't think that's the most flattering pictures of a warehouse.
I have never been able to find this anywhere other than Apex Junior. They sell Teflon covered wire that is super slippery, but it just doesn't melt when you solder it.
It is from the aerospace industry in Southern California, and it became surplus, and they bought it up.
Go figure.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a sweet place, and if any of the listeners want a really cool place to visit, electronics heaven, go to Apex. The prices are great for, you know, secondhand electronics of many flavors.
Oh, man, I would have a field day there.
And if you want just cool stuff, they have it. Like, friend of mine went there, and he got a bunch of titanium fins from a turbine there for like by the pound. And then he also got pure tungsten carbide discs that were like perfectly flat. And he got those too, like $8 for 20 of them. They were big tungsten carbide discs. Like, they just have stuff.
What do you use those for?
Nah, it was probably used for something military at some point, but now it's a paperweight.
The pictures on Apex Surplus's website are... So they had the IG-88, Stephen, heads.
Oh,
the awesome. Jet engine combustion chambers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on the front page. But I was scrolling through all their stuff. They have warfare missile launchers.
Okay, a lot of that is actually for rent for the movie industry. So that's what is their main source of business.
That makes sense.
It's rentals for Hollywood. So they rent out a lot of old computers like Apple IIs and all that just to sit on the set and look pretty.
Yeah, be background.
I mean, they all function too. So if you wanted to like show somebody using an Apple II, you'd go there, you'd rent it out. They also have a lot of old timey oscilloscopes that are absolutely gorgeous, or like aircraft instrument clusters, the whole shebang. If it was related to like Lockheed or Boeing or anybody based in Southern California in the 60s, 70s, they probably have something from them.
Do they have Boeing airplane doors?
Maybe.
From the 60s, 70s.
I mean, if it falls into the lot, it's fair game.
Oh, okay. EEV blog. Here's a video, episode 124. It's Dave Jones walking through Apex Electronics.
Oh, sweet. I never knew he visited it.
Yeah, this place looks like a gem for sure.
Yeah, next time I fly into that area, I'll have to go check it out.
Yeah, I went there one of the more recent times, and they let me hold the real Ghostbusters like vacuum pack that they have. It's a real vacuum pack from the set.
Oh, nice.
And they let me hold it. And it was heavy. It was very heavy.
I wonder if I'm imagining like they bought that at Surplus somewhere through some auction.
Yeah, they have a lot of movie props there that were kind of given to them because they were made from parts from Apex.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But if you go there and you talk with the employees, a lot of them are very cool, and they'll give you a tour and they'll tell you all about it. They have a room of electronics, like electronical devices that they rigged up to look pretty and blink. It's just a shipping container, and it is gorgeous when they close the doors and all you see is like blinking lights. It looks like a submarine.
So have you built anything for YouTube that uses stuff from there yet?
Not for YouTube. I'm working on a coil gun with a friend that uses capacitors from Apex that we get for pennies on the dollar. And we got like 10 pounds of enameled wire there for $100. It's great. But yeah, coil gun.
Yeah, let's talk about the coil gun then.
A lot scarier than you think.
Well, high voltage and high velocity.
Yeah, voltage isn't that high. I think we're currently at 100 volts DC, but
it's pretty high for DC.
Yeah, it's not instant death, though, if you touch one of the legs.
Have you touched one of the legs?
Yeah, because it's not going to go through you to ground. You have to touch both of them for it to be a bad time.
Sure, sure, sure.
But yeah, 100 volts is a party when you have a, like, I think 2 Tesla strength at the center of that coil. Do you want to hear the current shunt story?
Go for it.
Absolutely.
So we were trying to figure out how much coil current we were pushing because we're using an SCR to like trigger it. So we're like, hey, let's make a current shunt. I have this 18 gauge lamp wire. So I put a length of it across a D cell and I measure the current, and then I cut it up and like measure out the sections. So I get a quarter of that length, and now I have, you know, air quotes measured shunt, because I, you know, voltage drop and all that. And I put my oscilloscope across the current shunt. We fire off the coil and it's like 600 amps for 2 milliseconds going through some 18 gauge lamp wire. It was a party.
Have you propelled any projectiles yet?
So we shot a half inch diameter, two inch long steel slug, like 50 feet on 100 volts. And that was a single stage. We're cooking it up to like 10 stages by the end of this. We're aiming for hurt really bad.
Shoot through a wall kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, okay, if you're doing multi-stage, are you doing a timing thing? Or how are you going to get it such that all the coils fire as the projectile flows through it?
Well, there's two ways of doing it. You can do like a purely timed thing, or you can do like optical triggers. We have like a LED shining and another LED that'll pick up when the projectile is coming by. Then you have a fixed delay from that trigger to the coil, or you can just guess. But the fun thing is, as you reach higher velocities, the time that the coil is magnetized is longer than the time the projectile spends in the coil's field. So after the first couple coils, the last coils all turn on at the same time and make one really big magnetic field. So it's like one coil, like first coil fire, second coil fires, third and fourth coil fire, and then the last 6 fire all at the same time. And you just have a massive pull as it yanks the projectile through.
Neat.
And you get some very strong magnetic fields that very rapidly collapse and make big EMF things happen.
Yeah, how are you handling the snapback from that? Because those coils can, I mean, I don't know how big they are, but you could be generating many tens of thousands of volts as it collapses.
So I think the thought process is the SCR will absorb it and shove it back into the capacitor. SCRs, sidebar, SCRs are incredibly durable. They're not very good in terms of heat production and all that, but they can take a lot of abuse. So yeah, you can just shove thousands of amps through an SCR rated for 100 for a couple milliseconds and it'll be like, oh yeah, sure, why not?
All that's just reminding me of is the new launchers that they're using on aircraft carriers that are, they're not steam powered, at least the new generations, they're electromechanical. And I'm like, I wonder if the military has to get FCC certification for these big coil guns.
You can probably shield most of it just with, by just covering it with iron.
Or the hull of a giant ship.
Yeah, the hull of a giant ship.
Yeah, giant ship. They're also in the middle of nowhere, so international waters, do what you want.
It's also the government.
Yeah, they make their own rules. It's okay.
Yeah, they're the ones that make the rules about it. I didn't know that they were moving to an electric system on it. Because, yeah, they've been just doing, I shouldn't say just, but it's been steam powered for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I don't see why they need to go electromechanical.
I don't know what the reason is either, but that's one of their big things on rail guns. So,
gotcha. Oh, yeah. Rail guns are, we considered doing a rail gun, my friend and I, but we decided that a coil gun's a little bit cooler.
So what's the difference between a coil gun versus a rail gun?
So railgun, it has fixed magnets or like constantly on electromagnets, and you run electricity through the projectile, which creates an opposing magnetic field to the magnets that are stationary, and that's what forces it forward. And you basically have like brushes that rub across power rails as it comes through. With a coil gun, you have coils that need to turn on at the right time, and the object is either ferromagnetic or actually magnetic, and that's what sucks it along.
Gotcha.
So it's two different concepts. That's why the railgun videos you see has like a big plume of smoke. It's the brushes burning.
Vaporizing off.
Yeah, because the projectile or whatever carrier that holds the projectile actually has to physically make contact with the rails on it. The fun thing about a railgun in comparison to a coil gun, however, is that if the projectile already has velocity when it enters into the rails, the velocity just increases from that point. So effectively, you could shoot a gun into the railgun and then have it make contact with the rails, and then it just boosts the velocity from that point.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, that's a huge engineering challenge.
Just make a longer railgun.
Yeah, true, true. Make a longer railgun, but there's a lot you have to deal with. Like you were saying, things just tend to ignite when you rub those brushes on the rails like that.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, the reason they're going with rail guns over coil guns, at least my thought process, is like you don't have to worry about timing with a rail gun because it's basically a brushless motor versus a brushed motor. Mm. Coil gun is a brushless motor. Rail gun is a brushed motor in the most literal sense because it's computer-controlled coils versus static arc, brush controlled coils.
So Alex, what are you looking forward to the most going to your new college, California State University? What are you looking forward to the most, like actually being in electrical engineering now? Like what's your first class you're going to be looking forward to?
I'm just looking forward to like a lab where I get to actually work on circuits. I mean, a lot of it's going to be a step back from what I do at home, but it's going to be nice to actually just do it in a professional setting and understand a bit more of what I should be considering when working on circuits versus what I do at home, which is make it work. And if it works long enough to do what you need it to do, that's enough. So,
I mean, that's product development in a nutshell though, except that, it needs to last long enough for the warranty to run out.
Exactly. Yeah. The warranty for me is, you have to go fix it. So the warranty is indefinite or it needs to work once, get it over with.
Well, it sounds like you certainly have the practical aspect of getting the job done. You have that down for sure.
Yeah, I like to think I do.
I honestly hope that the labs are not boring for you, because it sounds like you are way past what the labs generally teach.
I'll have to do them regardless, so I'll look forward to it. And if anything, I just get to leave early because I already finished the lab. So
that's a good way of thinking about it.
So you're not that far in your journey yet, but what advice would you give to, let's say, high schoolers? I'd hope we actually don't have any high schoolers listen to this podcast, because that'd just, one, be weird.
I don't know. I think it'd be really cool, and I bet you we do.
If we do.
Greetings, younger people. Advice I'd give is find something you're passionate about and would love to do outside of a work environment, and then do that as a job. Like, it's not always like do what you love as a job, because then you won't love it. There's an aspect of that, but find something you're passionate about, and if you care enough about it, then it won't be unbearable to do as a job.
So go find a Lamborghini and solder a bunch of LEDs to it, right?
Well, if the Lamborghini is provided to you and the LEDs are paid for, go ahead. Don't go out and buy a Lamborghini just to put LEDs on it.
I think if you can just go out and buy a Lamborghini, you're probably not going to college.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Or you might be going to college, but you might be going to like a hoity-toity school to get like a business degree or something. Maybe I'm wrong there.
Yeah, that's... Well, depends on what Lamborghini. If you're looking at a Lamborghini tractor...
That's even more expensive.
They still make tractors, which was surprising to me, but I don't know how much they cost.
Wait, Lambo makes tractors?
That's what they originally did.
They started making tractors, they made cars, now they make tractors again.
Huh.
I don't think they ever stopped making tractors, actually.
That part of history is fuzzy for me. Didn't live through it, so I couldn't tell you.
So is there also any other upcoming projects that you're working on, Alex, besides the coil gun?
Yeah, the big one is also for YouTube. I'm working on... Y'all ever watch SpongeBob?
Oh, long time ago.
Yeah, long time ago.
Great. So remember the boat?
I mean, they're underwater.
The boat SpongeBob try to get a license for basically every episode? Yeah, I'm building that. I'm building a boat on wheels.
Does it float?
Okay. I'm going to dress it up like the SpongeBob one. It's going to be something.
Does it float?
No, we're not making it amphibious. That's a bit too much scope creep for us. But in a nutshell, it is a Go4 Interceptor, which is like a meter-made car. And we're throwing a 1969 StarCraft Falcon, which is a little 14-foot aluminum boat. And we're just shoving them together. And it is going to be an interesting combination of vehicles. And we bought the Interceptor as a non-running, like, oh, it has electrical gremlins, be my guest. And we ended up just tearing out all the electronics, and I'm shoving a standalone ECU onto it because I did not want to try to diagnose a aftermarket propane system.
Oh, it has EFI?
So it had EFI, but it was an aftermarket carbureted propane system where it like kind of injects propane into the intake before the throttle body, mm-hmm. and they just blocked off the injectors. So
it's a weird conversion.
Oh, it was. And we had to drain a lot of propane out of that tank, which was just a bonfire for a couple days. It's a lot of propane.
I have one more question before we sign off, Alex. So, because you've been doing kind of like the background off-screen stuff for a couple of years, why haven't you just decided to do your own channel?
So I've considered it, and just talking with other people in the YouTube sphere, it seems like making the projects isn't actually most of a video. There's a lot more that goes into it, and I'm just not interested in that aspect of it. Like, there's the whole storytelling aspect, there's the editing, there's thumbnail design, there's getting it into the algorithm, production as a whole. There's a lot more to it than just make a project and film it. And those parts don't really interest me, or like, yeah, I just don't think I could do them. So when I was given the opportunity to, you get to make cool stuff and just no strings attached, you get to make cool stuff for YouTube, I'm like, yeah, sure. I'll make them, and I'll make them happen. And yeah, I get to show up in videos. I get to make cool projects, but I don't have to worry about any of the production or the money or any of that. So it's nice.
Get to do the fun part.
Exactly. I just get to do the fun part, even if I burn a lot of time doing it.
All right. So engineering sounds like it's perfect for you.
I hope so. I hope I don't end up just in an office, just staring into a computer for the rest of my life. I hope I'm a little bit more of a practical engineer, but we'll see how that turns out.
So thank you so much for joining us, Alex. We're going to have you back on in maybe a year after you had another some actual engineering classes to see how that's going.
Yeah, sounds like a fun time. Thank you for having me.
And for those interested in learning more about Alex's work and projects, we'll put all the links in our show notes, and you can see those at forum.macfab.com. So thank you for listening to Circuit Break. We are your hosts, Parker Dolman.
And Stephen Craig.
Later, everyone.
Take it easy.
Thank you, yes, you, our listener, for downloading our podcast. Tell your friends and coworkers about Circuit Break Podcast from Macrofab. If you have a cool idea, project, or topic that you want us to discuss, let Stephen and I and the community know. Our community, where you can find personal projects, discussions about the podcast, and engineering topics and news, is located at forum.macfab.com.